So, Mr. Cady, can you tell us your approximate age, your occupation, and kind of where you were living during the time of the period of the Vietnam War?
Well, my age is 47, and my occupation is I restore antique furniture and repair furniture generally. At the time of the Vietnam War, I'm a Hillsborough native, and I was living in Hillsborough. I attended the J.W. Pointer Junior High at that time. I don't know what it is now. And my class was the first class to graduate from what we called the new high school out on New Bridge Road, which predated the school you guys go to, probably.
Yeah.
Our school's 4 years. And when I, after I graduated from Hillsborough High in 1970, I went to Portland State University. I graduated with a degree in political science in 1974.
So, can you remember anything about Hillsborough during the period of the Vietnam War, anything specific?
Oh, well, yeah, I can remember. I don't know anything. I don't know how much is specific to the Vietnam War,
even any major events or anything that were going on.
Yeah.
I mean, did it seem like in Hillsborough, the war, you know, was it really affecting daily life? Because, you know, in some other places it was, you know, they talked about it all the time. And
oh, yeah, it was a major issue in everybody's life. There's no doubt about that. You know, I can remember being in the cafeteria at the new high school one day when word came in that an upperclassman had been killed in Vietnam. And I didn't happen to know the guy, but you know, there were a lot of girls there that did know of him and were quite broken up about it. But you know, there weren't that many people from Hillsborough that were, certainly none that I knew, that were directly involved in the fighting or anything like that. I knew one guy who was killed in Vietnam. I later worked with a guy who served a number of years there, but we weren't affected by it in the way a lot of communities were, because there's no military bases in this area. I think Oregon has specifically tried to not get military bases. For years, you know, we had Hatfield, he really opposed having any military bases,
right.
I think rightly so, too, in the area. So there weren't, you know, there weren't servicemen visible or anything like that. And I hate to say it, but basically all we knew was what we read in the newspapers. For instance, I was kind of surprised after you guys called me, I went back to see if I could find, because I had files that I kept during those years, and I had quite a large file on Vietnam, and I, because I wanted to see if that article was in it that I had written, and strangely enough, the article was there, but so was all of the reference materials that I had used to write the article, and they were almost all exclusively from the Oregonian. Which is, you know, kind of surprising. Nowadays, I don't imagine people get that much of their information from the newspaper, but you got to remember, you know, this was way before the internet, or even television news was just like a half an hour in the evening. And of course, that was devastating enough, because, you know, really had all the fighting was on there every night, but after a while, it got so... you know, there was so much of this, and you had the body counts every day. How many Vietnamese were killed, how many Americans were killed, and how many North Vietnamese were killed, just like they were sporting events, every night on the news. And after a while, you kind of got numb to that, you know, because it went on and on for many years, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Were there any, like, protests, anti-war protests here in Hillsborough?
None that I specifically recall. I wouldn't be surprised if there was. Now, I do remember there were protests at Portland State.
Right.
Before I went there, and certainly a whole lot while I was there. But as far as being any in Hillsborough, I don't think so.
Now, you talked about, or a little earlier, about actually being in high school during the time and some of the different things that happened. Do you recall any of, like, certain opinions of the average high school student or anything like that, like the opinions of people during this time?
Well, yeah, that's really a difficult question to answer because, you know, there's as many different opinions as there are people. But not only that, the people's opinions were constantly changing over the period of this war. You have to remember that, you know, the first real casualties on this war started to come in 64, 65. And I don't believe we withdrew, finally, until 74, was it 73? I mean, I know Saigon fell in 75, and we were out before then. So this war went on over a period of like 8 years. And a lot of people at the beginning, I don't remember anybody being that gung-ho about it at the beginning. Of course, now that at the beginning of the thing in 65, I would have been 13 years old. So I wouldn't have been that aware of what was going on. I certainly remember, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution in 64, August 64, I think it was. There was a lot of discussion about that, and there were people that were opposed to it at the time, because, you know, the senator from Oregon, Wayne Morris, was one of the only two senators that voted against that resolution. So, particularly here in Oregon, that was kind of a hot issue. But at the beginning, you know, a lot of people were, nobody thought this was World War II, and, you know, this was not the good war thing, and people were not lining up to join the armed services or anything. But there was generally pretty supportive to begin with, but as time went by and the casualties mounted and it became obvious that there was some what was known in those days as the credibility gap. You know, that was a big topic at the time too. How you couldn't trust the government and what was going on. So people's attitudes really changed. You know, by 68, there was a lot of dissension. A lot of people were really unhappy with the whole thing. And then after that, curiously enough, it became a situation where most wars, I imagine, most wars are a matter of we have to win this war. That's the big thing. We don't want to lose this war, we have to win the war. But the Vietnam War was different in that after Nixon's election in 68, it became more of an issue of how do we get out of this war? And there was a consensus of opinion that we had to get out of this war. And that's where the dividing lines really, I think, came in amongst people's opinions. It was how do we get out of this war? Even the conservatives, you know, there were a few lame-brain conservatives who wanted to nuke them, you know, bomb them back to the Stone Age, but they were pretty few and far between and not taken very seriously. And then you had the leftist element, which I would say probably was characterized well by Jack Kirkwood in his articles, is what President Nixon always used to refer to as the cut-and-run crowd. I mean, they just wanted to leave all of our obligations and get the hell out of there. In fact, you've been studying this, you may have heard the famous declaration of, I believe it was Senator from Vermont, Aiken, I think his name was George Aiken, who said the solution to the Vietnam problem was simply for us to declare victory and then leave. And that's what, I don't think most Americans wanted to do that because we had treaty obligations there. We had a country that we were supposedly supporting and that had supposedly asked for our assistance. And most people didn't want to just drop the whole thing in their lap and let the North Vietnamese take over South Vietnam. So you had this divergence of opinion with the people on the left wanted to just chuck the whole thing, get out of there. People on the right said, well, you know, the ultimate thing became Vietnamization of the war. This was something that Nixon came right. to be the chief spokesman for. This is that, you know, we're going to turn this over to the Vietnamese and let them fight their own war. And I think, you know, really all the way along the line, even John Kennedy in 63 had said, you know, this is their war, and in the final analysis they're going to have to win it. Which is, you know, it's kind of odd. If you look back at other wars, look at World War I or World War II, we never said, you know, this is Britain's war, they're going to have to win it. It wasn't that, you know. It was, we're going to go over there and win this war. And this, again, and you know, part of the problem is that this technically was not a war.
Yeah.
It was never declared as a war. It was a police action. And we were supposed to be assisting the South Vietnamese government, whom we believed in all good faith wanted us to be there, did not want to be communists, and freely sought our assistance. Now, whether that turned out to be true or not is debatable.
Definitely. Definitely.
But if you go back and look at the articles at the time, South Vietnam is often referred to as a civil war. I'm not so sure that it was a civil war. It certainly was not the position of the U.S. government that it was a civil war. It was actually, the government believed that it was an invasion from the north. And actually, I think there's a good deal of more evidence for that than there is for it being a civil war. The South really did... the North had regular troops that they infiltrated mm-hmm. into the South. It wasn't that the South Vietnamese people were fighting against the government of South Vietnam so much as it was the North Vietnamese regulars and what was called the Viet Cong were fighting against South Vietnam. It was tremendously confusing. And I doubt seriously if that answers your question. But
it's good information.
Now, you were at the time obviously reading the Hillsborough Argus and reading Jack Kirkwood's.
That's where I got all my information.
Jack Kirkwood's articles, and you responded with more of a pro-war attitude. Can you kind of tell us what led up to that?
Well, yeah. I had known of Jack Kirkwood for many years because he was a teacher, I believe, at Hillsborough. Was he at Hillsborough High School?
I think he was.
Mid-high. Or was he at the mid-high?
Yeah.
Pointer. Anyway, back in those days, as today, really, the elements of the press, there were a lot of viewpoints that are not given equal hearing in the press. And the conservative viewpoint is one that is not frequently heard in the mainstream media. And somehow Jack Kirkwood had managed to get these articles into the Argus called What Price Peace?
Right, right.
and I remember I would come home from school and I would just be incensed by these articles. Because it was... I don't know if there's anything today that's analogous to what the Vietnam War was. I mean, it wasn't just the Vietnam War. The people that were opposed to the war were opposed to the government. They were opposed to American society. And the war was just like the tip of the iceberg. And from there, they would start by attacking the war, and from there on, they would go out and continue to attack all other aspects of American society, really. So, when Jack Kirkwood could have his, and this has been many years ago, you know, so I'm, so some of the details would be fuzzy, and I haven't read one of his articles for years and years, but he would start on the subject of the war, and it seemed to me as though he distorted the origins of the war, the motivations behind the war, how we got into the war. He would use this as a lever to pry apart people's affection for the rest of the government, you see. That it was, he seemed to take the position that we went into Vietnam because we wanted to get to the mineral deposits, or we wanted to make sure that our influence over the economic, over the economy of that part of the world was secure. And I totally disagreed with that. Now, I was a political science student, so I saw things in terms of political science. I don't think Jack Kirkwood did. I think Jack Kirkwood was more of a socialist, who saw things much more in terms of economics than politics. And it seemed to me that by this time, this was like 73 or 74.
72 it was actually.
That was it 72?
72.
By that time, the anti-war elements in society were so dominant, at least in the media, let's put it like that. They were extremely dominant in the media, that a lot of people never even realized what the genesis of that war was, how we got involved in it. There was an old saying that was real popular at that time, you may have heard it in conjunction with this or other things, but it went something like, you know, when you find yourself up to your ass in alligators, it's hard to remember you went into the swamp to clean it out. In other words, you know, the Vietnam War was something that really went awry from what the people who got us involved thought was going to happen. I don't believe that we went in there with any selfish motives whatsoever, really. In fact, I think our problem was that we went in there very idealistically, that we felt the people of South Vietnam wanted to have a free society similar to our own, and we were willing to assist. And if you go back to John Kennedy's inauguration speech in 1960, when he said something to the effect that we will go anywhere, we will bear any burden to secure liberty around the globe, you know. Well, these were the people that were in power at the time that we got involved in Vietnam, and it was really an idealistic crusade to begin with, but it went so far awry, the alligators got to be so thick that they didn't know what to do about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so anyway, I felt that by 72, people had gotten this steady barrage of leftist propaganda, really, about what the war was about.
Okay.
I mean, you had to the point of, you know, like Jane Fonda went to visit Hanoi, our enemy, and sat in a North Vietnamese tank waving the North Vietnamese flag. This was this was consorting with the enemy that was killing our soldiers. And there was no great outcry about that. Well, there was, but not in the press. The people who Nixon called the silent majority, the people that supported that supported our troops, didn't necessarily support the cause, but supported the troops that were in the field that were getting shot at, you know. I thought they needed some reinforcement as to why we were there, and so that's why I wrote the article.
Since then, have you been involved in any other activities? Since then, were you ever involved at the time in any other activities?
Hi.
Oh. In what sense? What activities do you mean?
I guess he's asking, during the period of the Vietnam War, were there any activities that you participated in war-wise different than the articles, or the article?
Well, it was kind of an ongoing debate.
Sorry to disrupt you.
That's okay. There was a ongoing debate in the schools, of course. I mean, every day in civics class and things like that, this would be a hot topic about Vietnam. But as far as most of the events and things were staged by the left.
Mm-hmm.
You had the moratorium and all this sort of thing that basically people on the right just reacted to. There wasn't
like the Hillsborough Argus.
Yeah.
Just a second. Now, regarding the articles, did you ever receive any letters or anything like that? Or any opposition to the articles or any, you know, like support of your article?
You know, I really don't remember. I remember that Jack wrote a letter to the paper in which he said that he was complimented that I had read his articles and I had responded in a reasonable manner. Okay. But then his next paragraph was that he wished that I had been more honest in my scholarship. Well, so I remember that kind of incensed me at the time.
We had asked him, and he didn't remember.
He didn't even remember
if he had responded to it. So
yeah, he did. I imagine that was not a real memorable event in his life.
No, I'm sure.
He was very anti-war.
Oh yeah.
Well, if I recall correctly, wasn't he a Quaker? I thought that he was connected with the. There was some sort of an anti-war society at that time, and it was. Founded by the clergy
of something that he was really involved with.
Oh, clergy and lady concerned.
Yes, he was really, really involved with.
Yeah, he was the chairman of the Hillsborough area.
Yeah, I think it was something along those lines, yeah.
And that he was majorly involved with.
Yeah, right.
Now, since then, since you wrote the article and we're in the Vietnam War, has any of your opinions
Well, yeah, I would say that they have changed. You know, everybody's attitude towards everything changes with hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is you don't always recall everything that occurred. You know, at the time, you're taking in all these different influences, and as time goes by, some of them fade from your memory. So you think, well, why did I think that, or why did I do that? You know, and so it's always kind of dangerous to look back at things with hindsight. I say that the issue, particularly by the time I wrote that article, was not whether we're going to win the war or anything else. The issue was how do we extract ourselves from this quagmire, which was the popular term for it at that time, which everybody pretty much agreed it was. I did not think then, and I certainly do not think now, that we should have just cut and run, as Jack Kirkwood seemed to be suggesting, and a lot of people suggested. I think it was a terrible, terrible war. I've heard people say that it was all for nothing. I don't think that it was all for nothing. I think that the war was very badly managed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost everybody would agree with that. That might be the only point on which you could get total agreement on the Vietnam War, is that we did not fight it wisely. Even diplomatically, we didn't. You know, didn't do what we should have done. And we certainly paid for it. Some people paid a lot more than others did. But I don't, at the time that article was written, I don't think that I would have suggested, even with hindsight, I don't think there was anything else that we could have done. We tried to turn the war over to the South Vietnamese. And one thing that when I look back through this file that I have from the late 60s and early 70s, I was struck by how many articles there were articles in that file that said things, to wit, if free elections were held in South Vietnam today, 80% of the people would likely vote for the Thieu government. He was the president at that time, you know. And that being the case, and whereas the North Vietnamese that became, the North Vietnamese were always depicted in the press as being these nationalists, people who were first in the hearts of their countrymen and all this stuff. You know, the North Vietnamese never conducted an election in their entire history. The thing was a dictatorship. It's still a dictatorship today. We were trying to defend what we considered to be a young democracy in South Vietnam, very, very similar to what we did in Korea, you know. Mm-hmm. Little did we know that by the end of the war, these South Vietnamese guys would not even be fighting. I mean, you know, they'd be paying somebody else to take their place. They just didn't care. A lot of them didn't care. And there we were, sacrificing a lot of human lives and materials, trying to uphold what they didn't seem to even care about. It was a mess. I don't think that there... I think what Nixon did with the Vietnamization of the war was the only thing that could have been done, and I think really the only, and that, of course, this is with hindsight, but I really think the problem was is that when Johnson escalated this thing, at a certain point he should have just said, hey, wait a minute, we can't win this. But if he was getting the same kind of information that we got out of the press, I'm not surprised that he was carrying on, because that file is loaded with articles about how there's no more Vietnam, there's no more Viet Cong, we've eliminated them all. Victory is in sight, we should be in control of North Vietnam, or I mean, we should have them all fought back within the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. Tons of this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the information really broke down during this period. You didn't know who to trust. You didn't know who you could rely on. And there's many articles in there of columnists, for instance, you know, confidently predicting victory within 6 months, and confidently predicting that the South Vietnamese government was really a sound government that we should be fighting for. You know, what can you do when you live in Hillsborough, Oregon?
Nothing, really.
you have to rely on, you have to trust somebody at some point.
And I guess they trusted the press.
Well, we trusted the government to quite an extent, much more than we do today.
Yeah. Now, when the ceasefire was called, you know, and for the holidays in Vietnam, and then Saigon and several other cities took over in South Vietnam, the Viet Cong took over that kind of area, do you recall?
I'm not sure what you're getting at there. You mean the ceasefire where the United States withdrew, or the ceasefires? There used to be Christmas ceasefires. And all
yeah,
that
right. And there was a Christmas ceasefire, and then Saigon was taken over. Major.
That was after we left.
Was that after we left? I thought there was one before that. I don't remember. There was a holiday that they celebrate in Vietnam.
I don't think Saigon ever was taken over.
But it had been hit hard by the Viet Cong.
Well, there were several instances of that, and probably the most, you know, to this day, and I haven't really done any reading about Vietnam for 20 or 30 years, but in 1968 there was what was called the Tet Offensive, which you probably heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was a major defeat for the North Vietnamese. Militarily speaking, they got a real licking in that battle, which took place all over South Vietnam. Mm-hmm. But politically and diplomatically, it was turned into a major defeat for the United States. And it turned out that that was more important than the military aspects of it. This was really a war where the politics really completely superseded the military picture. It didn't matter what the Americans did as far as the fighting was concerned. Because it was such a different war. The North Vietnamese could come in and they could shell. I believe at one point they shelled the embassy, the American embassy in Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do any damage. Didn't accomplish anything except for, you know, throughout the press and around the world, here was this picture of the military colossus, the United States, being shelled by this little power that we were trying to crush. That was the only thing that made any difference. And that had, for the left, for people like Jack Kirkwood, you know, that was a big deal. That showed that we were losing the war, that we could never win the war, that we were the bad guys, because this was essentially a civil war between the North and the South. And I think that was a delusion that they liked to entertain. I don't believe it was a civil war. It was an invasion from the North, and it was the same way. It was very much like the Korean conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But by the time, you see, by the time Vietnam came around, the character of the American people had changed drastically from the time of the Korean War. People were tired of wars, for one thing. They were really tired of political wars, which
yeah.
Korea was. Whereas we talked a big talk about, you know, we would bear any burden, go anywhere to protect democracy. Democracy was really what we idealistically were supposed to be protecting. But the fact of the matter was that we didn't really have the heart to do that anymore. If it was going to cost as much as this did, we weren't going to do it. And particularly when you had the South Vietnamese weren't, you know, they weren't even willing to participate that much.
Definitely.
So, and then, you know, whether South Vietnam could have ever, whether they could have ever even understood what democracy was all about became a big issue, you know. A lot of countries have what's called show democracy, where you know, they go through the motions, they have the political parties and they have the elections, but you know, one party gets 90% of the vote, goes on for years and years, and the whole thing is corrupt and the people don't have anything to do with it, you know. I think now, at this point, we've become pretty cynical and we understand that, but back in those days, we didn't understand that that sort of thing went on. We thought, we saw the world as democracies and totalitarian dictatorships. And there was fighting going on in that part of the world. Which side are we going to be on? That's how we got into the thing, basically. It turned out to be a gross oversimplification of what was happening. So I just wrote those articles hoping to show people that our intentions were good in the beginning, and that we still could salvage some honor out of the situation. You know, the way the left and Mr. Kirkwood was depicting the situation is that we were the evildoers in the situation. We've caused the war. There's no justification for that kind of a view. We did not cause the war. Ho Chi Minh, he had troops infiltrating the South as early as 1958. And not only that, Ho Chi Minh and the North Vietnamese were a bunch of monumental, they never, ever honored any treaty that they ever made. You know, the country was partitioned in 1954, and there were supposed to be free elections. This is also the genesis of this. If you read my article, and I'm not even sure if this is what you're interested in, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to know about this stuff? Or, you know, the country was partitioned in 1954 after the French left.
Right.
And it was supposed to be a temporary partition.
Right.
The country was supposed to be reunited under a government
that could be somehow elected or arrived at somehow that would respect both countries, which wasn't, they weren't countries, okay? They were partitioned parts of a single country. Well, anyway, Ho Chi Minh never, ever honored any of that. He had signed the agreement and he said, yeah, sure, we'll go along with this. But he almost immediately started sending troops into South Vietnam. He wasn't going to sit still for any elections. Mm-hmm. He was going to take the place over. And Eisenhower and Kennedy both tried to keep the North Vietnamese up above that peril, up above the partition line, so that there could be elections somehow. And they invited him to participate in elections in the South. He wouldn't do it. I mean, he was a totally anti-democratic character. And in those days, that meant to us that he must be totally evil. And since he was also aligned with the communists, well, there you go. I mean, that was the combination. That was the worst thing we wanted to see happen. So anyway, all those things may have been proven to be not right. That in that sense, I guess my view has changed. I certainly would, like everybody else in the world, if I saw this situation coming up again, I certainly would never agree to go into it. There were people who knew at the time what a disaster this was going to be. Like General MacArthur said, never to become involved in a land war in the Asian continent anywhere. Because I think he knew what since he had been in Japan and Korea, I think he knew the pitfalls there, but, you know, the government didn't listen to him, and he turned out to be right, and everybody else turned out to be wrong. But as far as the withdrawal, as far as the thing, Nixon used to say that he wanted peace with honor, okay? The left didn't seem to care anything about that. They just said, hey, look, we made a mistake here. People are getting killed. Let's drop the whole thing and go home. Well, you couldn't really do that because the South Vietnamese were our allies, okay? The communists, if they took over South Vietnam, there was going to be, people feared a tremendous bloodbath because the South Vietnamese had been supported by us. They were our allies. You couldn't blame the North Vietnamese communists for coming in there and murdering anybody that had been associated with us. And we didn't feel it would be honorable for us to leave under those circumstances. So we tried to turn the war over to the South Vietnamese. You know, they didn't, they couldn't go with it. They couldn't, I don't, you know, I'm at a loss to explain why they didn't want to fight for their freedom. Whether their government was so corrupt or whether it just doesn't matter to them. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what great Asian democracies there are. I mean, are there any? Good question. You've got the Philippines, which is but their version of democracy is not the Western version, really. You know, you've got places like Taiwan, little things, little places like that. But I mean, even that was dominated by the Chiang Kai-shek's relatives for years. Probably still is. You know, it's just, we tried to project Western values mm-hmm. on that part of the world. That might have been another major mistake, you know, that we made.
You were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, honor. Now, yeah. Was honor...
That was a big word back in the late 60s.
So it was a big issue with the people, like, we wanted to get out of the war, but we want to do it honorably.
Put your finger right on it there, because that was probably the biggest topic of debate. As I say, it was unreal. It wasn't like other wars where people discussed how we could win this war. That just simply was not a topic of discussion. The topic of discussion was how can we get out of this honorably, and pulling the rug out from under our allies did not seem to be the honorable course to most Americans. And I think, all these years later, they were right. I don't think you can just get into a situation like that and then decide suddenly, oh, this isn't in our interest anymore. We're leaving. We're cutting out.
You just cannot do that. The repercussions from that, to our other allies would have been devastating. You know, they would not have had any reason to trust us. And it really, it's the fact that we got out of there with as much intact as we did, I think, was a pretty amazing feat. And it probably, you know, people often say the Vietnam War was an American loss and we lost the Vietnam War. Well, those are kind of strange terms to apply to that particular war. But the thing is, I don't think we lost our honor in the war. And the reason I think that is because after the war, our other countries that were still allied with us, or those that were against us, still respected our resolve. And that was the important thing, that people doubted our ability to fight somewhat, but it wasn't like, oh, well, we can do whatever we want to over here, because the United States is, they're played out. They're not going to oppose us, you know. It didn't have those kind of repercussions because we stuck with it as long as we could to get some sort of a resolution to it. Now, at the end, during the truce, when we backed out, it was pretty well established that the North Vietnamese were going to violate the treaty because they'd violated every other agreement that they'd ever been party to, and that they were going to take over the South. They started infiltrating troops into the South as soon as the United States left. But by that time it was like, look, we have sacrificed all these men, all these millions, if not billions, of dollars of materiel to try to help you guys out. And if you won't fight for yourself, then the hell with you. You know, we gave it our best shot. The rest of it's up to you. And they didn't do it. They didn't want to do it. So I don't see that we had anything to be ashamed of, really, at that point. And that's my feeling. That was my feeling at the time. It's my feeling today. And I still think the people that wanted us to just get out of there at any cost, which I think was kind of implied by Mr. Kirkwood by the title of his articles, you know, What Price Peace? And the answer was, any price. Peace is more important than anything else. And that's not the view that I took, or I think most Americans took. It was not that peace was more important than anything else. It was the kind of peace that we were going to get out of the thing.
So is there anything that we failed to ask you?
Well, I don't
know. Like to mention.
I don't know if I, you know, really talked about what Hillsborough was like during the Vietnam War, because I'm not sure that Hillsborough was affected that much by the Vietnam War. The country had this policy of guns and butter at the same time, basically. It wasn't like World War II where you had scrap drives,
mm-hmm.
and rallies and war bonds and stuff like that. I mean, that was one thing that was really bad about the whole idea of going into Vietnam. The Johnson administration thought that, well, we can fight this war and not even affect the people on the home front. You know, we won't ask them to make any sacrifices. It was a bad idea right from the word go. You know, because he quickly sacrificed American support by doing that. Had they made a big deal out of it and said, we're going to war and we need all your support, well, they might have gotten it. But then they said, hey, look, you know, we're going to fight this war over here. You guys don't even have to be concerned about it.
It was a bad idea.
It was a
major mistake.
I honestly don't recall any other thing specifically to Hillsborough at the time. As I say, I'm probably not the best person to ask about this because I wasn't in the military. The year that I was eligible for the draft was the year they came up with the lottery. First time they'd ever had the lottery.
And just randomly draw your name or your number.
Right.
Birth date.
And my number was about 345 out of a possible 364. And they took the first 140 that year. So there was no possibility of me being drafted. And I was going to college anyway, which was another bad idea of the war. They deferred anybody that went to college.
And they kept on deferring more and more.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you know, guys could find any number of ways to get out of going to the military. So, you know, that caused a lot of disaffection amongst the population, too, that only the poor people and the people who, you know, weren't going to college wanted to fight the war. That was really bad, but in the context of American history, it wasn't unusual.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, it wasn't, not even in the context of American history, but in the context of the history of any country in the world, it wasn't unusual. In other times, like during the Civil War, you could actually pay somebody to take your place in the army. And I'm sure they did that in Britain and France and all over Europe, you know. And actually, our system probably represented a step forward from where we, from the system we had during the First and Second World War. But combined with all the other things, combined with a very complicated, you know, complicated reasoning behind why we're in the war, it was just another thing that led a lot of people to think the whole thing was a mistake.
I agree. I really agree.